My name is Vithika. I'm 17 years old. Today is May 18, 2019. I'm speaking to Komal, who is my mother. We are recording this interview in Lafayette, Colorado. Where have you lived, when, and why? And tell me about where all you've lived in your life.
I've lived in India and United States, within India in multiple cities. And since 96, I've been living in United States.
How old were you when you lived in all the places that you lived, or like around India?
I was born in New Delhi, which is the capital of India. And then we moved from New Delhi to Ahmedabad, which was another metropolitan of India. And then went to school. Did my middle school up to high school in a small town in north of New Delhi, and then went to school to another university, which it was a university, it was a college town, and then moved to United States.
How did the differences in the places, what was like the most memorable place that you lived?
The most memorable place I lived is actually where my teenage years were. That's called Yamunanagar, and it's 200 miles north of New Delhi.
Okay. Where is your mother from? Where is your father from? Have you ever been to these places? What were their experiences like, and how do you think that shaped who you are?
My mother and my father both are from Pakistan. They were born in Pakistan. My mother was born in north central Pakistan, and my father was born in northwestern Pakistan, very close to Afghanistan. Both of them grew up as refugees in India, and that shaped up my perception of Pakistan. And the religion, the Islam religion.
What was your early childhood like in terms of education? Where did you go to school? What was that like?
Up until we were in the metropolitans, because my father was in federal government, we were part of the central school system run by army. Mm-hmm. So I was part of that until we moved to this small town, which was my father's hometown. That family was originally from that area. So he tried to move closer to his family. And the education was very different in that small town. I went to an all-girls school, by the way.
You did. And when you moved from place to place, how did your schooling change?
The schooling changed when I was studying in the central school system that was run by, it was actually an army school. I was studying in a system which changing the school didn't matter, because the curriculum was national level. But when I came to Yamunanagar, the curriculum was very local, the medium was Hindi. It was very, very difficult for me to get my grades up. I was doing very bad initially.
Going to central school or the government-run school, how do you think that shaped your beliefs versus being in, I guess, essentially public school in Yamunanagar?
The funny thing is, the central school was the public school, mm-hmm. and the school in Yamunanagar was a private school, which I don't think there was any impact that way. The only thing that I can see had happened with that move from that school big school system to a smaller school system was I became very hardworking, because I didn't have a choice.
So when you went to like public school, which was government based, was it more aligned towards government education and education with, I guess, propaganda on support for India's government, stuff like
that? No, nothing like that. No.
Okay.
Not at all.
What were your perspectives as a young child? You're like, that you can remember being like, oh yeah, this is what I think of the world, or the world around me, this is what I'm aware of.
Well, we were, thankfully, my father was a voracious reader, and he was one of those people who had subscription of 5 newspapers,
mm-hmm.
From economic to world news to local newspaper and a local regional language newspaper. So mm-hmm. we used to get 5 newspapers. He used to discuss, growing up, he used to discuss the what is happening in the world. So my exposure through him was very, very significant. I would say more than anyone in my peer group. I knew most of what was happening around the world. And then, of course, there was radio.
Mm-hmm. And do you think in school you were taught about, like, what was happening in the world? Or?
I don't think so. We were taught a lot of Indian history.
Yeah.
Because Indian history is very, very rich. You can read as much as you want on Indian history. No, we were not exposed at the world level in those days in school. No, the only lens that I had was through the newspapers that my dad used to subscribe to.
You talked about how you were aware of the Islam faith because of your parents' upbringing in Pakistan and, like, the proximity to Pakistan and Afghanistan. What was your faith growing up and your experience around that, and what was a defining factor of what religion you practiced, or, like, your perception of other faiths and stuff?
Well, we grew up in North, and part of a warrior community, so Hindu religion and the Sikh religion, which is also a North Indian religion in India, were very closely knit religion. So it was okay for us to go to a Hindu temple, at the same time go to a Sikh Gurdwara, but I do not remember ever going to a mosque.
Mm-hmm.
Although there were mosques, I do remember waking up to azan at my grandmother's house, because that's how they, you know, that's the first prayer of the morning. But we never visited mm-hmm. any of the Muslim mosques. I think part of the reason was because of the atrocities that happened on Hindus, maybe vice versa as well, during the partition time. And that's what we grew up hearing about, the tension between Hindus and Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And also if a lot of history was taught about how Muslim kings back then, the Mughal Empire was killing Hindus to convert them into Hinduism,
mm-hmm.
To Islam. So it was, the lens in the books was also very helped a lot in shaping up mm-hmm. our belief about Islam, because there were stories about.
So you would say that your perspectives and your beliefs were shaped by what your parents believed, as well as basically your community of
and
Hindus
also,
and Sikhs.
Also the Indian history.
Mm-hmm. It was, a lot of it was turned towards saying that, mm-hmm. Interesting.
One thing that we grew up believing was that Islam is violent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the perception I still have.
Yeah, even though,
I have many Muslim friends right now, and I don't think they have anything to do with violence.
Yeah.
But that perception does not, that belief does not go away.
And you've just been fed that.
And part of the reason also was Muslims were the ones who were meat eaters. We were not.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you were a warrior community and you were in the war, there was no reason to eat meat because the produce was so good.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's so interesting that the agriculture has that kind of impact. So in a large part of when you were alive, America and Russia were in the Cold War. Will you tell me about if you knew anything about the Cold War and the Red Scares that were occurring, and communism, and this infiltration of the two large superpowers of the world kind of fighting against each other, but not like actually physically fighting, but like the nuclear wars and the science technology advancements at the time. What was your perception of that, or if you knew anything about that?
Yeah, quite a bit actually, because again, because of the exposure through the newspaper that my father made us read and made us make a habit of reading. So our entire family was news junkie. So, new Cold War, but from a lens of Russia, because India, during partition, aligned with Russia, USSR back then, and Pakistan aligned with US. India got a lot of technology from USSR at that time, and Pakistan got a lot of aid from, like, money aid from US. So we were very much aligned with Russia, and our perception of Cold War was through the lens of Russian news, or because we had very strong alignment with them. We were the allies. One thing I do remember very clearly, that my dad sharing this story about then the Prime Minister of India, her name was Indira Gandhi. She was the first woman Prime Minister in the entire world in 70s or early 80s, 70s. She, when US and Cuba came on a very strict non-alignment, she actually flew to Cuba to meet with the president of Cuba, Fidel Castro. And this was a big news in India. She actually hugged that man. So there was in that particular, even though India was a big democracy, she and her son seemed like if they had lived their full lives, I would be inclined to think that USSR would have a much bigger role in turning into communist India, into communist country, because there was an emergency for a long period of time where everything was rationed, and it was pretty bad in India at that time. And if we look at the history of India, there was some alignment deep enough that USSR tried to change the country from democracy to, but that didn't happen. That didn't work out because the opposition was very strong.
Yeah. So was it government opposition, or was it more people opposition?
It was government opposition.
Okay, so the government
and a lot of people were behind government, the opposition.
Okay.
That so there was very clear two parts, like a Congress party and the Janata Party, and Congress party was the one who was clamping down and trying to become, and now that I think of that times is where. Almost aligning with the communist culture, and the Janata Party was more of democratic thought process.
So, with the two superpowers of the USSR and America, were you aware of like the nuclear weapons occurring and all of that
nuclear
technology?
Proliferation was a big topic in our conversations at home.
Yeah,
because that's what the news was coming out, and India was not a nuclear power at that time at all. Nor was Pakistan, and we wanted to stay away from that. But but that was a big topic of discussion in the news. From the news on our dinner tables.
What was your knowledge regarding like the space race that was occurring? Did you know anything about that?
The space race was not as much of our conversations, to be honest with you. We knew that US NASA was making strides in a nuclear in space, but India was relatively behind, and I think that was the phase when India sort of decided that it's time to start aligning with America.
what was your knowledge about anything happening in Vietnam and the infiltration of America?
Yeah, so communism? Because we were so aligned with USSR, and USSR was still existing. It had not, it was still USSR. It was not Russia.
Yeah.
and because we were aligned with Russia or USSR, the news, again, I now feel that was from the lens of USSR, not from the lens of America.
Mm-hmm.
In our mind, America was evil.
Yeah.
Getting into Vietnam's business.
Mm-hmm. And so, did you know anything of the news, I guess, coming from America where there was anti-war protests, like the Kent State Massacre, or the rhetoric and sentiments of America trying to basically prevent communism in a whole holistic view?
Not at all. Not at all. We did not have any idea what was happening inside America.
Mm-hmm.
We were seeing it from the perspective of America coming in, waging war on Vietnam, but we did not. We were not aware that there was an uprise within America
mm-hmm.
against that war that their own country started in Vietnam.
Wow.
Like, people were upset. We didn't know that.
Do you think if you... Well, not if, but when you were receiving this Russian side of the news, how was your perspective or beliefs about America changed?
Personally, growing up, America was never a place to be
mm-hmm.
because America was kind of portrayed as evil
mm-hmm.
In many the way we were brought up.
Yeah.
in fact, English was a spoken language because we were aligned with British as well because of their rule on the country for 200 years. But the most common foreign language that was taught in India was Russian.
Wow. Did you know anything about Richard Nixon when it was happening? Like,
not at all. No exposure, none whatsoever. Watergate, I had to learn about Watergate when I came here in 96 because people used to talk about it and I had to educate myself.
Yeah. As pop culture is defined in America, did you have like a specific popular culture when you were growing up as a teenager? And do you remember any like visual or tangible effects that Western culture had in India?
Well, India is, I don't know if you know, but India produces the most movies in the world, more than Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So Bollywood was the pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
We were rarely exposed to, especially living in the town I was.
Mm-hmm.
My cousins living in New Delhi were more exposed to the pop culture. Like in seventh grade, I first heard there is someone called Michael Jackson
mm-hmm.
and he dances very well. And there was no television, but I liked his music. I remember going to a ice cream shop and hearing him for the first time, and Ritu Masi uh-huh. told me he's Michael Jackson.
Uh-huh.
I said, this music is very good, and she says, this is Michael Jackson. So that was my first exposure to US pop culture,
mm-hmm.
American pop
yeah.
culture, but grew up in very much in Bollywood pop culture.
So America's technology was evolving a lot during the Cold War, and there was like mobile phones that came out in the 70s and all of this technological advancement. Did that affect your life in any way? Did you see it at all in India?
None whatsoever. Absolutely not.
No
exposure. If it was not made in Russia, we didn't care.
Yeah, you just weren't exposed
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, the funny Nobody thing is gonna... when I went to college to do my computer science course, the computers were donated by Russia,
mm-hmm.
but the software was coming from, and books were coming from US.
And did that change your perspective at all? You
were
like,
we were the first generation computer scientists, if you will,
yeah.
at that time, or first generation masters class of computer science, and we were my perception definitely changed about America when I went to school, because they were supporting Indian schools big time.
So you're like, this is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was less evil, I guess.
Less evil. Yes, mm-hmm. less evil. And by that time, we also had one professor. Now, that's an interesting thing. Where the school I went to, my master's, one of the professors who was a visiting professor was actually a professor from Rutgers University, but he was a local there. So he would come during summer and take summer classes with for us. So we would hear America through him, and about New York. It was pretty. It was so fascinating. That's when I started thinking that I need to think about maybe moving there. But nothing was in like. But he glamorized America to a point where the entire class ended up in America.
Really?
Entire class. Not even a single person living in India anymore.
I wonder if were your perceptions of America met when you immigrated?
Well, it was a difficult time when you migrated. It's a difficult time. So no. because we came from a very closely knit family, and here there was no one, so it was very depressing.
There was a lot of Middle Eastern and American connection during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know anything about that, or were you given? Was it turned into something evil because America was connected with Middle Eastern countries, but Soviet USSR was in Afghanistan? So how was that provided to your knowledge?
Well, it's very interesting that India, before America or before Western world even started connecting with Middle Eastern world, India was very closely, like, as bad as we think about Saddam Hussein, he was not an evil person in India growing up.
Yeah.
So, and Iraq and India had a lot of trade going on, and also a lot of labor back and forth. So many people from India would go, because Iraq was booming at that time
with oil
and construction. So they were building because of the oil. They had a lot of money, so they started building the country. And Indian civil engineers who were not finding jobs in India, because India was not constructing at that time, would go to Iraq and run those projects. Oh. Very interesting, yeah. Infrastructure was built by a lot of Indian project managers who were civil engineers.
Did you know about the Iranian hostage crisis where 52 Americans were held at the embassy?
Yes, I know that. And there was the airline was Pan Am. The reason we know about it was one of the air hostess was from a town near where I used to live. So she was an army brat. She was from an army family, and she ended up as an air hostess for Pan Am. And she was celebrated when she died. So that's my view of that hostage crisis. But if you ask, again, my advantage with all this was my father's view of the world and his quest to know more and more and more, so that we just became like that. And even though most of my peers would not have this kind of view at all, actually.
Yeah, which brings me to the question of how were you brought up that was different from the gender roles that society had for you?
Well, most of my peers got married at 17, 18, right out of 11th grade. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some of them did not even finish 12th grade and got married.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas my father believed in education and equal education, equal opportunity for girls and boys. And although I was almost going to get married at 18, he stopped that from happening and made sure that I finished my education. So I was very, very lucky.
Were you aware of the women's rights globally and like how that was changing?
Not at all.
No?
No exposure whatsoever.
Do you know who Ronald Reagan was? Did you know?
Yes, Ronald Reagan to us was this president who was an actor before. The funny thing that happened after that was many Bollywood actors tried to get into politics. So that was the so that was the era where the things started to change. When if I look back, where American influence started to happen, it was movies that changed the things.
Yeah.
That had more impact than just the newspaper. Movies just took, movies and pop culture was the one that changed, started changing things from the ground up, mm-hmm. from the foundation.
And at this point, do you think you guys are getting more exposed to American sides of things rather than just Russian?
Yeah, totally. This is sure. where the switch happened. It was mm-hmm. mid-80s, I would say.
Yeah. Were you aware of like the AIDS crisis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was your perspective on that? What was the rhetoric you were hearing? And like the drug trafficking, all of that happening all at the same time with the epidemic of the AIDS, the drug trafficking and all that stuff.
Well, AIDS was being portrayed as the most evil thing that can ever happen to human species.
Mm-hmm.
And the rhetoric was that it came from US.
Yeah.
It came from US, and the rhetoric was... now it's going to infiltrate into India. And that happened so fast. Within a couple of years, there were more AIDS-infected people in India than in an entire United States.
Wow. And was there any rhetoric surrounding like LGBTQ plus community homosexuals in India? Because that was really big in America. That was like...
No, not from that perspective. But the transgender was a very common thing in India.
Mm-hmm.
Because even Hindu scriptures talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a full-blown community of transgenders in India that mm-hmm. is... they're not part of normal community,
mm-hmm.
but they're they have the culture, or I should say the culture of thousands of years have made them special citizens of the community. And one thing which is very interesting about India is the only country from the times that we know of, since the government, you know, the new government came, or even before, where you have, you know, on the forms, the government forms, where you say male, female, there is transgender.
Oh.
And it has always been there. It has always been there, which is very, when I came to US, and it was like, it was kind of very interesting for me to not have that not see that option on the forms, because we grew up seeing that even on our school applications, mm-hmm. if you are male, female, or you're transgender.
Mm-hmm.
So that was normal. And over here, it was like a hue and cry about this community, which was a normal community.
Mm-hmm.
Ousted, but normal community. Like, it's normal to have transgenders in your community.
Mm-hmm. And so...
lesbian or gay were not that was not part of the conversations, right?
Okay.
No, nothing.
And is it kind of today or not really?
It is.
It is.
The law has been passed for gay marriages.
Okay. Were you exposed to the differences in social communities like LGBTQ plus or like racial communities or whatever existed?
No.
Were you aware of the differences that, like, in America, there's so many types of people, and that, like, America's known as the place where all the immigrants go seeking opportunity?
No exposure mm-hmm. of that sort.
Did you know that about at the Iran-Contra scandal that happened in the Middle East during
'87? No.
That was, because you said India was close to Iraq?
Iraq.
Okay, so for the Iraq versus Iran war, what was that rhetoric when America was kind of infiltrating in between that war for their own?
Are you talking about the Gulf War or the Iran-Iraq War?
Iran-Iraq War.
Well, we were definitely aligned with Iraq, but for some reason, I am not very, I can't recall any mm-hmm. of that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I don't recall lots of news around it, mm-hmm. but I don't remember what was the perception. We were definitely aligned with Iraq.
What was the perception around the Persian Gulf War?
But because again, Iraq was Iraq and India had trade going on the oil, mm-hmm. so we had to be aligned with Iraq.
Yeah. So then, in the Persian Gulf War, what was your perception of that?
By then, America was not evil, and
yeah, because the collapse of communism had occurred. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah.
What was that like?
USSR falling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do remember, very, very clearly remember that USSR falling.
What do you remember?
Yeah. News all over, and there was kind of a relief in the more democratically aligned people that, you know, that influence on India will go away. And I think that one of the big historical moments in the world, because India was seeing that as the largest democracy that will ever happen on this planet,
mm-hmm.
And the attempts to change that through the regimes was very clear later on. So by this time, America was not the evil power. They came to save what was that little country? Saudi? No, Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
They came to save Kuwait.
And
I do remember all-nighters watching the TV. But TV was available by then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the color TV had come by then.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the actually live war on the television.
Oh, my goodness. What was your perception of that? Like, because you're saying that you weren't really criminalizing America anymore. And did you criminalize the USSR at that point, where you were like, what did Russia do?
No, we still don't. It's that funny relationship that we have with USSR, that we still have that very soft corner for USSR or Russia.
Yeah.
At least at heart. You know, I don't know what's happening in the political world
mm-hmm.
In India from that relationship perspective, but I still consider Russia as close to heart. That's very interesting though, right?
Yeah. What did you know about the Persian Gulf War when it was happening?
I told you that I pulled a night all-nighter because the war. Because it was shown through those night vision cameras.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Given the outcome of the war, when America was like technically victory because of their alliance, were you aware of the post-war life that was happening in the Middle East for Iran or for Iraq, because you guys were aligned?
I don't remember much of it.
No,
not much of it.
Did you hear a lot of things about the terrorist groups coming out of this time period? With like Osama.
India was dealing with its own internal terrorism at that time.
Yeah.
And it was pretty bad. Both Sikh terrorists and as well as Muslim terrorism, so Mujahideens and
mm-hmm.
And then two of the prime ministers back to back were assassinated by terrorists. So we were dealing with our own terrorism to a point where what was happening, or, you know, Osama bin Laden or mm-hmm. all of these were distant figures, mm-hmm. but not in the conversations as much as the local terrorism was in the conversations.
And this rhetoric surrounding like terrorism happening in the Middle East as well as in India, did that change like your perspective and like change your beliefs about religious tensions and things like that as well?
Yeah, in our late 80s, early 90s, the entire state of Kashmir
mm-hmm.
Was, it had a huge exodus of Hindu population. So all Hindu pundits left that state.
Wow.
3 million Hindu pundits left that state because Islam was taking over in that state. And it was all... So this is why America was evil in our eyes, because mm-hmm. Pakistan was supporting all that effort, mm-hmm. but all the money to do that was coming from America.
Oh, okay.
So this is why America was evil, mm-hmm. because America was not understanding what they were supporting was ultimately hurting other people.
Mm-hmm. And then not soon, very soon after this, you ended up immigrating to the United States.
Yes.
Tell me about your story about that whole process of why you did it, when did you decide, your emotion that you connected with the process of moving prior, what your life was like before and after, who you went with, things like that.
Well, the process was relatively simple. Dad got a job here in the United States, and as a nice Indian wife, I had no choice but to move with him. So it was really scary in the beginning, but then it became exciting.
Mm-hmm.
He came here 4 months prior to me. He got here, settled in Boulder, in a little den, a one-bedroom den apartment in basement near CU Boulder. And I came 4 months later, and it was I was very depressed. I did not like the country. It was okay. I had to make it work for myself, and I'm a fighter, but I did not like it in the beginning at all. I didn't like the process of moving. I didn't like leaving my parents. I did not like any of that.
So you were hesitant, you'd say?
Totally hesitant.
How did having a child and a family at that point of like you immigrating change your ideas or perceptions, beliefs?
One thing was in 4 years into so when we came here initially, we thought, oh, we're gonna be here for a couple of years and we're gonna go back. That was the base of our even coming here. It was mm-hmm. never a permanent thing. And actually one of our friends, Tony mm-hmm. and Rima, they actually left.
Yeah.
They left in 7 years. One big difference between them and us was we had a child and they didn't. It was easy for them to pack up and leave. And we had Vidushi, mm-hmm. and she was growing up in a school system here, mm-hmm. which as the time passed, it became more and more difficult for us to imagine her going in a school in India. And we did not have any businesses in India that we could say, we'll fall back on that or anything. So we would have had to start all over again if we went back to India. And that was not attractive at all.
Did you experience any like education opportunities or like things that you were like, oh, now that we're here, we can let our daughter have these opportunities? Oh,
totally. That was one of the reasons that we did not go back to India, was mm-hmm. the education opportunities, not only just for her, but for me as well.
One thing that happened while you were here was your like 9/11 occurring. Can you tell me your recollection of that? Like, what was that like?
I was pregnant with you. I was supposed to be at Pentagon that morning on a project. And because I started throwing up a night before, I canceled my flight. And I stayed in Denver. The rest of our team actually left, and they had to drive back. And nobody was hurt, mm-hmm. but that's the major recollection of 9/11.
Did you have any reaction to when you found out this happened?
Yes. And one very sad reaction was, now America knows what India has been saying for years, that Islam is a violent religion.
And
that was my call with my dad,
mm-hmm.
that now they will know what we have been dealing with over hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, okay, stop supporting Pakistan, stop supporting, because there were so many terrorists that actually came out of Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a relief, as sad as it sounds,
yeah,
but a point proven,
mm-hmm,
that we were not saying it just for the heck of it.
So then what was it like with like Bush doctrine and America's foreign policy changing around the time with them not supporting certain Middle Eastern countries and
we were
the
heightened security? We were very happy with that.
Yeah.
We were ahead. Because when security in comparison between America and India was so different when we came here, India would have very heightened security all the time because of terrorism around the country and inside the country. And it used to be very, very interesting for us to see that America does not have the same security standards, and they're very lax until after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. What was it like coming to America from a dominantly patriarchal society to, I guess, more open in that sense? Or did you feel it at all? Or no?
I did not, because I grew up in a very open, mm-hmm, household.
Yeah, so yeah, you were...
It didn't...
Didn't feel like you were...
No.
Yeah. What was it like applying for citizenship and your first time voting? Who'd you vote for? Like, what was that first time like?
Not much emotion there.
No.
Mm-mm.
It was just a difficult process or anything?
No, it was just a booklet that we had to read, learn American history, which, you know, I'm a reader anyway, so it was not a big deal. First time. Yes, I used to work for federal government as a contractor at that time, and they celebrated. Everybody gave me a flag.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, this looks like a big deal to me. I was not considering it a big deal.
Yeah.
But I was sad that I had to give away my Indian passport because I was very attached to that.
Yeah.
That is for sure. That was the, if you ask me the emotion, that was the emotion.
Would you have ever thought that you would have moved and immigrated and become a citizen in America, given what you grew up hearing during the Cold War and grew up with the rhetoric that you had regarding America and the perception you had?
Not at all.
No.
Not even in my wildest dreams. I would have thought that I would be in America and raise my kids in America.
Well, that's all I have for you. Do you have any ending statements about...
With this interview, I do think that it's all perception,
mm-hmm, for sure,
and more than the reality.
Yeah.
Because if a government wants to do a proper, a real propaganda, they can actually sway the entire population which I think is what is happening in China. I'm not giving them the right information from outside the world.
Mm-hmm.
The perception is what they know. For example, North Korea, same thing.
Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm, that they don't know anything but their premier, who is Kim Hwang, Yang Hwang. So he's the only person they worship, and that's all they have on their hand to even know.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.